You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I have on the line now Andrew Little. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
That's great. So earlier this week, it was reported that the government plans to build 69,000 homes in Auckland, but Housing Minister Nick Smith has since clarified in Parliament that the figure is only a theoretical number of houses that could be built by the government under the unitary plan to replace 27,000 existing state homes. What's your reaction to the minister's clarification?
Yeah, there is no plan. It's just an idea because they said that there are now some sections that the governor owns that could be freed up, and if they had a mind to do so, they could build that number of homes. But as I say, there is no plan to do so. It was all about giving the appearance of trying to come up with an answer to the chronic housing shortage that exists not only in Auckland but in other parts of the country too. And you know, it's in this day and age, after years of knowing the shortage is not only there but getting worse, they still don't have a credible response to that, and it's that shortage that is driving up house prices, driving up rental costs, and frankly, you know, pushing people out of homes. That's why we have the homelessness problem that we have at 41,000 people. It's crazy stuff.
They did say that last year, though, they built more homes than has been built in the last 25 years. Is that not enough?
No, it's not enough. I mean, if you think just in Auckland alone, 13,000 new families arrived or settled in Auckland last year, some from, you know, internally in New Zealand, some people from overseas, and they built, I think, just under 9,000 new homes. And that was at the beginning of last year. There was already a shortage of roughly 40,000 houses. That was what the minister signed off on as the shortage when they signed an agreement with the Auckland City Council. So there is a shortage. It is big, and it's getting worse by the year. So just having that number of houses they say were built last year, even assuming it's correct, it's still not an answer to the problem that we've got.
Labor has said they would build 100,000 affordable homes for first home buyers. How would you ensure that this would actually happen?
Well, we will ensure it will happen. There's a number of things we need to do. We will, accompanying or as part of the plan, we will have an affordable housing authority. So it'll be an outfit that works with private developers, that works with local council, that works with iwi and any landowner to get projects going, and it'll have some regulatory and planning power, so it can start to, you know, get decisions made and get things done. But what we will also do, because we will be doing projects at scale, the government will provide initial sort of seed capital to get stuff, you know, get the earth moving and get the houses built, but those houses will be sold privately and the money will effectively recycle. So that over the course of the 10 years that we say we can build 100,000 homes, at the end of the 10 years, the last home is built and sold, the net cost to the taxpayer is nothing because those properties will have been sold. There has to be some rules about, you know, putting in place the drainage and the infrastructure and the roading, and we think there are better ways of doing that than what happens at the moment, which is basically any new home is front-end loaded with the partial cost of that. And the other aspect is we've got to build or, you know, add to the workforce, the construction workforce, to allow that to happen. And working with the experts we've got advising us, they say roughly 3-year period to add significantly to the workforce to do that. Which we will do. We will also have people coming from overseas, as we do with the Christchurch rebuild, to complement that workforce. So I am confident from all the advice that I know we've received that we can do this.
Moving on to the Ohiru electorate, the Greens announced this week that they're pulling out of the race in order to help the Labor candidate beat Peter Dunn. You've insisted that this isn't a deal, but back in 2011 you criticised ACT for standing aside for National in the new Plymouth seat. How is this different?
No, this is not, in the sense, a deal. There is no deal. We have reached no agreement about any electoral accommodation, but the Green Party made the decision on their own account, if you like. That's their decision to do so. I think if you look at my track record as leader, I'm not averse to parties making decisions that are in the best interests of ensuring a change of government. Actually, we not so much stood aside a candidate, but we backed off campaigning effectively in Northland in the Northland by-election in 2015. and I stand by that judgment call. It was the right thing to do. It meant that New Zealand First got an extra MP in, and it may, you know, it's given the government a way to thin majority in Parliament. So if this helps to change the government, then I'm all for it.
What do you think happens then for the Green voters in this electorate, as Greg O'Connor, your Labour candidate, is seen as having quite a socially conservative views, especially when it comes to law and order? Will he have much to offer more progressive voters?
Yes, he will. And I think as the campaign wears on, I think certainly Green supporters who are wondering where to put their electorate vote will see that Greg has very progressive views on, for example, cannabis law reform, on criminal justice law reform. I mean, he probably has a more progressive view than I do on cannabis law reform, to be honest. I have a real nervousness about greater access for young people to cannabis if we liberalise much more. So, no, I think I have total confidence that even, you know, solid Green Party members, when they see and hear Greg O'Connor and question him, he has very progressive views about, you know, a society where there is a place for everybody, everybody is safe and secure, and everybody has opportunity. Those are core Labor values.
And just lastly, I wanted to touch on today the chairman of Pike River mine owner Solid Energy, Andy Coop, has told MPs that he would resign if a re-entry to the mine proceeds. What's your response to this?
Yeah, I was there when he said it. I was a bit stunned. But anyway, if that's what he wants to do, that's what he should do. But it's not an answer to the fact that there are highly qualified technical experts who are saying that a re-entry is technically feasible and actually possible, you know, actually people going in on the basis that the drift to the mine, that is the long tunnel, can be made safe for re-entry and therefore examination and potential recovery of any bodies or other human remains. So if his attitude is he doesn't want to bear it, well then, you know, he should go, but let others take over and do the right thing by the families.
All right, well, thank you for your time this week, Andrew, and I look forward to speaking to you next week.
Likewise. See you.
Thanks. Bye.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.